And welcome, you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. Boy, the week has flown by again. Here we are, another Friday. We'll be back again next week, Monday, with a brand new edition of Parashare Supernatural News. Tim will be back in studio with me, running strong for the entire week. And don't forget, next week is the beginning of brand new True Crime Tuesday, so you get 5 days a week of the best in paranormal talk radio, and every Tuesday you'll be able to check us out with an additional show. So make sure you go subscribe to that right now on iTunes and on podcastone.com. Make sure you sign up for True Crime Tuesday so you never miss another minute of True Crime Tuesday. Plus, you get to hear the true crimes and dumb crimes. Stupid criminals will be taking that over with us as well. Tonight, though, as we wrap up our Friday, we have another Theater of the Mind coming up here in a bit. Our guest for the evening is Willow Cross, and Willow has written many books. We're going to discuss them tonight. Haunted, 100% totally true ghost stories, and Bad Things, a paranormal collection from Willow Cross. Willow, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's cool. I always love to talk to people that have been collecting ghost stories and researching the field as well. What got you involved in the paranormal? Did you have experiences of your own, or was it just an interest in finding out what other people were having?
Absolutely. It was my own personal experiences. It's kind of funny. I wrote Haunted additionally, the first one, because there's four. And by the way, that's available in audio, print, and ebook.
Okay.
Plug it a little bit. I originally wrote that as a gift for my readers to explore this. And it was very scary to put myself out there and say, hey, I've seen ghosts. Because when you start talking about the paranormal, back when I wrote the first one, it wasn't as popular as it is now.
Okay.
And my biggest fear was everybody was going to think I was a lunatic. And a lot of people did.
Right. And they still will.
I don't think that's going to change. I'm forever going to be that crazy lady with a ghost. But I started, I wrote it as a gift for Halloween for my readers, and I never dreamed in a million years that I would be writing more of those, but the interest was great, and I was getting all these messages from people. I've experienced this, and I've experienced that, and I'm glad you put this out there because it makes me feel like I'm not crazy.
Right, and it's always good to feel like you've got something to share with other people, and that other people like you have had experiences around the world. How old were you when you first began witnessing the paranormal in your own life?
I was very, very young. A lot of the stories from my childhood, I didn't remember until after the first book came out, and my cousin Christy read the book and said, you know, this doesn't surprise me because I remember you telling me about ghosts when we were little girls. She's just 2 years younger than me. And she started reminding me of things that had happened when she had stayed the night,
mm-hmm.
and things I had told her, and I had completely forgotten about it because the first story she told me, I was 5 years old. And it was, I had this doll. It's a creepy doll story. This
okay.
This isn't in the haunted books, by the way, so this is an exclusive because I haven't written about this. I had one of those Wilcox dolls. It was nearly as tall as I was, that my oldest sister had given me as a birthday gift. And I didn't like her from the time I got her. I was absolutely terrified of that doll. And for a little girl to be scared of a doll, it's probably odd. All my grandchildren that are girls love their dolls. They're not scared of any of their dolls. But I was terrified of this doll, and it creeped me out. And one night, Christy was spending the night, And we were down in our basement. My parents had a finished basement, sleeping on a rollout couch. And we kept hearing footsteps in the basement. Now, this was a brand new house. This was not a haunted house. It was built, and we moved in when I was 3 years old, out in the country on farmland that had been farmland forever. So there was no reason for this home to be haunted. And we were laying there listening to these footsteps, and it was scaring the crap out of us. So we got up and turned the light on, and my doll was down there because Christy had been playing with it. So we had what my mom called the root cellar, which was just a back portion of the basement with an old wooden door and had shelves of canned goods in there. So I took the doll and put her in the root cellar and shut the door, and we went back to bed. And I don't know how much time passed. I was fine. But a short time later, we heard these footsteps again. And we were terrified. We were hiding under the covers, absolutely scared to death. And finally, Christy got brave enough to turn the light on. And that freaking doll was sitting at the foot of the stairs.
Oh, geez.
Nobody had been down there that to my knowledge, unless I just didn't wake up and right. One of my older brothers was messing with me. But nobody had been down there. And we were just horrified. We ended up leaving that doll in the basement. We went upstairs, locked the basement door, and went to my bedroom to sleep. It was summertime, and in the summertime, we slept in the basement because it was cooler. We didn't have air conditioning back in the day.
Sure.
That's the first memory I've had of something that could be paranormal. Now, it might not be paranormal. I had two really mean older brothers. They very well could have snuck down there and been messing right. with this. But when we got upstairs, they were sound asleep. There was no noise coming from their room. I didn't physically walk in there and check. I wanted to get in my bed and lock the door and be safe because right. I was careful. But
so,
from that
so the doll
on,
freaked you out, but going down into a dark basement into the root cellar, that was okay.
No, that didn't bother me at all. I mean, it was my home. I was perfectly comfortable. Going into the root cellar was where we did our chemistry projects that my mother never knew about.
Sure. Oh, so it was a safe yeah. zone for you. All right.
Adding laundry detergent to bleach and stuff that you shouldn't do so you don't blow up your house. I did mm-hmm. all kinds of crazy stuff. But yeah, I felt perfectly safe in that house. And right after that, I gave that doll to my niece. And my niece, who wanted that doll when I had it, she's 3 years younger than me, so she was just a baby, couldn't stand it in her room either. And she was only two. She hated it. So I think that doll ended up on the burn pile. I'm not real sure what happened to it, but they got rid of it because all the girls in the family were scared of it.
Well, that's a fair warning to dolls, that if you're going to get up and start walking around on your own, you're probably going to end up on a burn pile at some point.
Right. Well, and I don't even know that the doll was actually walking. Of course, in my 5-year-old imagination, that was the doll walking around and making those noises. But somehow, without the help of either myself or my cousin, it made it from a closed room to an open room at the foot of the stairs. And I can tell you neither of us got out of bed.
Did other family members have experiences in that house?
If they did, they didn't tell me about it. The whole paranormal suit. I grew up in a very fundamentalist Christian home. We churched it up like you would not believe. Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. If the church doors were open for any kind of occasion, my entire family was there. And everything paranormal, my parents considered demonic. So you did not speak of these things. I never had conversations with my brothers or my sisters until I was grown about paranormal, and they have never relayed stories to me. Well, no, that's not true. One of my sisters did relay some stories to me, but it was from a time when she was grown and somewhere that she had lived. I'm the youngest of six, so you just don't talk. That's not something you talked about right. In my family.
Now, you've had a chance to kind of explore this in your own life. Did you continue to have experiences growing up, or was it just one-offs here and there?
It was one-offs here and there. It really was. The next experience that I can remember after that mm-hmm. actually came in seventh grade, and that's quite a few years in between. And it wasn't at my home. It was at my best friend's house. She was having a slumber party for her birthday. It is the one and only time, I will tell you, it's the one and only time I ever saw anything levitate. That's something I've only ever seen just that once. So a lot of people expect when they're hearing ghost stories that it's going to be like Paranormal Activity and there's going to be, you know, dining room table and chairs are stuck to the ceiling levitating. Dishes flying around the room and toys talking and laughing. And in real life, it's really not like that, but that doesn't diminish how terrifying it is for somebody that's not used to it.
Right. Well, tell us about what happened when you saw something levitate. What was it and how did it go about happening?
It was horrifying because it was a butcher knife.
Wow.
And yes, it was a butcher knife. I was at my friend Lori's house for her sleepover. And all the other girls were out in the living room, and her mother had made homemade pizza. And she had just cut it, and she'd laid the knife behind the faucet on the sink. And we had gone out to get more pizza. And we were standing there talking, and all of a sudden, both of us just looked towards the sink. I don't know. It was a feeling, I guess. And she had a very creepy house anyhow. I hated her house. I hated going there. But I did because I loved her. And we look over, and this knife is halfway between the sink and where we were standing and just drops on the floor. Made a big loud noise clattering on that tile floor. And her mom came running to see what happened and asked what in the heck we were doing. And we were bawling. Our tears rolling, hysterical. It just absolutely terrified us. You can imagine.
Right.
We were watching scary movies anyhow, but it wasn't imagination. It really happened. And I never spent the night at Lori's house again after that.
Yeah, she had to come. I blame you. Did you ever ask her again if there was more activity that took place in her house?
Oh, yes. Yeah, she had a plethora of ghost stories from that house, and a couple of her stories, although she's not named because most of the stories that I've added from my friends, they did not want their name on it. They wanted to remain anonymous. But two of the stories in one in Haunted 3 and one in Haunted 4 are from Lori's house.
And do we have any idea why her house was haunted? Did she have any history for it?
No. She's not done any research, and I haven't either. Her parents don't live there anymore and haven't since high school, so I have no idea.
So I always find it funny that these researchers and experiencers who are out putting out together books never bother to go back and research the original locations that they had experiences to see if they can find an answer of why it took place.
Well, I think it's just because a lot of people will tell their stories, but they don't mind. They may not mind to tell you the story, but they don't really want to know what happened there.
Right.
Because the truth of the, you know, if you find out that you spent 15 years living in a house where there was a grisly murder and a whole bunch of people died, I mean, would you ever want to go there again?
Well, no, forewarned is forearmed. I'd rather know what happened now and look back at it. But I get where you're going with that. Well, I mean, that's a more traumatic experience when you start seeing a knife floating in the air and then dropping to the ground.
It was horrifying, and it was made worse by the fact But it was covered in pizza sauce, so it looked like blood, so that didn't help anything. But it was, man. It was just half. It wasn't moving toward us. It wasn't moving away from us. It was just stationary. And I don't mean we stood there and looked at that thing for 3 minutes. I mean, we saw it drop. It was very, very quick, but it was very, very scary.
And how did her mom react when she ran in and the butcher knife's on the ground and there's blood splatter? I mean, pizza sauce?
She didn't believe us.
Really?
No, she thought we were just messing around and we didn't want to tell her the truth because we'd get in trouble.
Gotcha.
With a knife. And I learned at that point from that particular scenario, I'd already known to keep my mouth shut. But at that point, I learned you really can't tell anybody these things. You can't. And I didn't really experience other people's houses, weird things, strange things, getting creeped out because they'd tell me their ghost stories. I don't know. It's like I say in the book. I don't know if those experiences were real paranormal experiences or the result of too much hot cocoa and too many scary movies, because that can happen. But the things that I experienced once I moved out of my parents' house, those I can validate from the first experience on. Most of them.
What was that? What was that first experience? What did you have happen?
Oh, okay. The very first experience I had moved into a little apartment. It was shortly after I graduated high school, with one of my friends. She was terrified to live there alone, and it was just a one bedroom little efficiency on a third floor of a great big huge house in Bluffton, Indiana. And I moved in there with her, and from day one, I loved that place and was completely comfortable. She, on the other hand, was a mess. She could not stand to be there alone, and I could not understand why, because considering it's the first place I ever lived outside of my comfort zone of my parents' house, yeah, I should have been uneasy. But it really almost felt like my dad lived there with me. Hmm. And she believed it was haunted, and even though I'd had experiences, I believed she was crazy. It wasn't until I started smelling cigar smoke. You know that's not cigar smoke, like from a pipe tobacco. You know how it smells sweet and almost has a fruity smell sometimes?
Right.
I would smell that pipe tobacco, which reminded me of my grandpa. I don't know why, because he didn't smoke a pipe, but it reminded me of my grandpa. And I would just feel comforted and safe. And all kinds of weird little things happened in the apartment, but they mostly happened when she was not around.
Hmm.
Or when I was not around. They would happen to her. And she was scared to death. I could not leave the rundown of the gas station to buy a pack of cigarettes and leave her there alone. She would go with me because she didn't want to be in that place for 2 minutes. And she was constantly saying, when the lease up, we have to move. Well, we finally jokingly came to the conclusion that was haunted by an old sailor. I don't know why I came to that conclusion, but it just seemed like when I smelled that smoke, I saw just an old guy in a yellow rain jacket with the yellow rain hat smoking a pipe, kind of just an old salty dog, you know?
You were haunted by the Gorton's fisherman?
I know, yeah. That's kind of what I had in my head as far as what this person's personality was.
Sure.
And he was so comfortable. He was like,
well,
when
sure.
You're little.
They tell you right in the ad. They tell you right in the ad. Trust the Gorton's fisherman. What are you to be afraid of?
Maybe Gorton had already trained me mentally to accept this. You know, I do like fish, so. But anyhow, the night that resulted in the horrifying experience was actually a pretty miraculous thing. My girlfriend had this crazy ex-boyfriend, and when I say crazy, I mean crazy stalker, would not let her go, abusive mentally and physically, which is why she broke up with him. And he was just not a good person. And one night, and it was very late at night, I don't remember the time now, but it was late, and we heard him coming in drunk. He had a big drinking problem at the bottom of the stairs. Now, you had to go up to get to our apartment. It was the ground level. When you walked in, there was an entry door, and off to the left was a stairwell, and you would go up a flight of stairs, and it would turn and go up a little flight of stairs, and there was the second floor. And then you would go up another flight of stairs and turn and go up another small flight of stairs, probably 20 steps maybe, and there was the third floor. Might not have been 20 steps. That might be too much. And that was our apartment door. There was no other apartments on the top floor. And we could hear him yelling up the stairwell. He was screaming her name, and I love you, and you're not going to do this to me. And then he'd call her foul names and tell her she was going to pay. And we could hear him stumbling drunk up the stairs towards the apartment door. She tried to call 911. Our phone was not working. This was not in a day. I mean, we're talking, this was 1988. So we didn't have cell phones. I don't even remember if they had cell phones back then, but if you did, you were probably rich. And she tried to call 911, and the phones were out. There was no phone service. And we were freaking out, and I kept trying to calm her down. Of course, the door was locked. It had one of those little bolt locks that go across the top, the little skinny ones that you put instead of chain. And it had a doorknob lock. But these were those, do you know what a trailer door is? If I say trailer door, does that make sense to you? Those thin panel doors that you can put your fist through, even if you're weak.
Right.
It was one of those kind of doors. So I knew that there was no way we were keeping him out. So I grabbed up a baseball bat that my older brother had given me when I moved out of the house because I needed protection, and nobody trusted me with a gun. Probably rightly so. I grabbed that and was just praying that the neighbors were hearing all of this and they were calling the police, because I didn't know what to do. All I knew was I was going to sling that sucker and aim for the head, because he was a big dude. And if he got that bat away from me, there was nothing we could do to protect ourselves. I knew that. So he makes it all the way up the stairs. And when you're in a position like this, paranormal or not, it feels like time stops, like it takes forever. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you if it took him 3 minutes to get his drunk butt up those stairs, 5, 10, or 60 seconds. I don't know, but it felt like forever. And the next thing you know, he's slamming his whole body against that panel door over and over and over again. And I stood there clenching the end of that bat, knowing that door was going to fly open or he was going to come right through it, ready to swing as hard as I could. And that door just stayed shut. It did not break. It wasn't, and the smell of the pipe tobacco was so strong. I couldn't see it, but it almost felt like you could choke on it. It was so strong. And I'm standing there, and of course I'm more worried to get my butt whipped by this humongous idiot than I am whether or not a ghost is there. But I'm standing there petrified, hanging onto this bat, and then I hear the police. I hear lots of footsteps, lots of yelling, another slam against the door, another slam against the wall outside, and then them telling us, you know, this, the Bluffton Police Department, you can open the door. We have him in custody. Because the neighbors, thank God, were home and had heard and had called the cops. And we open this door. Now, this door doesn't open out. It opens in. We open this door, and there was a body-shaped hole where the first part of that old panel door busted right through, probably on the first time that he threw himself against it.
Sure.
But the other side of that door, the side keeping us safe, wasn't even a dent. Nothing. No splinters, nothing. And there were four cops there that night, and all of them were amazed that he did not go through that door. Now, there was a little tiny, I don't know what you'd call it, maybe a 1x2 or something that went across the center, you know, as like a support.
Right.
But I'm a weakling, and I could crack one of those with a karate move, and I don't even know karate. You know, there's no reason that that man did not get through that door other than I believe there was something on the other side keeping us safe.
Wow.
She moved out because she was terrified to be there and that he would get out of jail and come right back, which meant I had to move out because I couldn't afford to live there all by myself. So I had to move back home. But it was pretty amazing. It was amazing in a good way because I really felt safe and protected. And I do believe that my old Gordon's fisherman, it's funny that you say that because now that you did, I'm like, yeah, he protected us. He kept us safe. He was not going to let that guy in there to hurt us. I believe that wholeheartedly. And I did do some research later on that place. And found out that the original owner of that house had built it. It was him and his wife. And they had three kids. And all three kids died before the age of 18.
Oh.
And he lived there in that gigantic house by himself until the age of 93 when he passed away from natural causes.
Well, you guys definitely had somebody watching out for your back that night.
Yeah, I totally believe that is what that was, that he was my protector, which is what I called that story, and that is in one of the books. I totally believe he was my protector that night. I don't think he liked Kim. I don't think he liked her at all. Oh, I just said her real name. I didn't say her real name in the story. I don't think he liked her. But he must have liked me. Maybe something about me reminded him of one of his children. But he most certainly didn't like her because he picked on her all the time. She would constantly feel like somebody was touching her, tugging at her hair, giving her a shove, and she was terrified to go down the stairs. When we left together, I always had to go down the stairs in front of her because she was terrified that whatever it was going to push her and she was going to fall down the stairs and break her neck. So our experiences living in the same place were vastly different, which happens a lot more than what you think.
Maybe maybe it was, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing, that even though the ghost was not fond of your roommate and friends and liked to pick on her, kind of like the Big Brother scenario, nobody else can.
Right.
And when there was a real physical threat, you and your roommate became safe from the help of the spirit that, you know, didn't want anybody else picking on his little sister's kind of vibe.
Yeah, I totally believe that. Or, you know, he might have just been a jokester. Maybe the fact she was scared to start with gave him license to be a prankster. Maybe, you know, there's So I know my big brothers thought it was funny to scare the crap out of me every chance they got.
Right. And if the spirit knew she was easy to needle, it could have been any. Maybe it was the owner's, one of his three kids. Maybe it was one of the boys just teasing her and playing with her, but it was Daddy that stepped up to protect you guys at the end.
They all died in that house.
Right.
The entire family died in that house. So it could have been any of the five of them. But I do believe that it was the original owner, the old man. I could not find any kind of information that led me to believe that anyone else had died there. So I believe it's him. And let me tell you, that information is not easy to find.
No.
You have to really be determined when you're going, and you have to plan on sitting your butt in the library, not like they show on TV where you go for an hour and you find the files and the next thing you know, you have all this information. No, it's months sometimes.
What? Willow, are you trying to tell me that what we see in TV and movies is not reality?
Yes, I'm trying. That's the message I always try to get out.
You're shattering my illusions. All right. Willow Cross is our guest this evening. When we return, we'll hear about some of the other tales that she's collected for her books. What are some of the most scary encounters? We'll deal with all of that. But right now, the doors to the Darkhives have swung open, and it's time for another Theater of the Mind. Whispers by Kevin Thorsten. This is a story I don't tell often. I promise sincerely that this has scarred me for life. And although I've looked into the psychological explanations for what I heard and perhaps natural explanations for what occurred, they still remain unsatisfactory to me. When I was a child, I was scared of the dark. I swore to my mother that I heard voices in it. They were not necessarily evil, but they weren't familiar, and they scared me. It was not uncommon in the middle of the night for me to wake up and hear whispers. That's what I would call them, whispers. Mom just figured that they were bumps in the night, you know, typical kid nightmare material. Well, I tried often to explain to her that it was more, much more than that, that they sounded different from one another, the way people's voices do. And on some nights, I would get so scared from these whispers that I would need to sleep in my mom's bed with her. It was an added bonus that the bathroom was directly outside of her room for my late night needs. Now, I should add at this point that when walking out into the hall to go to the bathroom, you look directly down the stairs that would lead you into the living room on the first floor, as my mom's bedroom was on the second floor. On one such night, around Christmas, I awoke and I felt the need to relieve myself. I walked out from the door and distinctly heard the phrase, "Look!" And to my astonishment, a red light, almost like a spotlight, was cast upon the wall at the very bottom of the stairs. The light had no other source. It was by itself, and I was transfixed by it. Being a little kid, and it was being a few days before Christmas, I knew what this light was. It was Santa! How else could he get into my house to know if I was being a good boy? I was so excited, I began walking down the stairs to greet him, picking up my pace after the second step as it began to creep off the wall and fade into the darkness of my living room. That's when I heard him. A very strong, masculine voice this time, different from the first, not at all like my father's voice. It said, "Stop. Right now, go back up those stairs." I listened, turned around, and what happened next, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I would believe it if anyone else told me the same story. After reaching the top of the stairs, I heard a very loud crash. And that sent me running back to my mother's bed, where I jumped straight under the covers, and I stayed there the whole night. When we awoke the next morning, the poinsettia lights, little Christmas flower lights that glowed red, my mother had put all along the railing down the stairs, were pulled straight down to the bottom of the stairs. Some were broken, and some seemed like to be torn down by some kind of forceful anger, laying in a single pile. The dry sink in my living room had fallen from the wall. My mother could not explain it. My father was worried we had been the victims of a home invasion. My sister was crying. There was nothing missing. Nobody had broken in. There did not seem to be any reason for why this had happened. And then I saw it, and I kept quiet about it because I was so afraid that I could not force words out of my mouth. There, On the edge of the wooden dry sink, which had been facing up, were three indentations where the finish on the wood had been worn, almost as if in a forceful grip. Something down there had grabbed it, torn it, and thrown it down. That was what the bang was. I was mortified. After that day, I never heard a single voice again. I don't like to imagine what was waiting downstairs for me that night, if it was anything at all. But I can tell you that the reality was that something had physically acted upon two things in my house near the bottom of the stairwell. After this, I had never heard another whisper again. Which is sad, because in some ways, I would have liked to thank the man, that masculine voice I heard that stopped me from going down those stairs. This happened when I was 7. I'm 20 now, and because of this incident, I'm still afraid of the dark, especially shadowy stairwells.
All right, let me break it. If there's anyone here, you can speak to me now through this device.
Not Ted Madison.
How many people are here with me right now? Where exactly are you?
Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Willow Cross, our guest tonight. And we're talking about her book, Haunted, 100% true, totally true ghost stories. She has 4 volumes of these stories collected. We're going to share some of the bad things from these books, some of the scarier tales as we progress through the rest of the show. Willow, again, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you again for having me.
Let's get started into some of the creepier experiences that you've collected over the years in these books. And I know you've said you've got quite a few. What is the scariest thing, before we launch into other people's tales, what's the scariest thing that happened to you? Or was the story we just heard the most frightening that's happened to you?
Well, there have been several incidents. Some of them I don't talk about. There are some that are not in my book because I won't talk about them. I do believe that those particular instances with diabolical influences, in that's not something I'm comfortable with sharing. However, this one particular story, it's called The House on River Met in my book. It's in book one. Happened in 1992. And I will set the stage before I get to the scary stuff, because I think it's important that you know what was going on at the time. My husband at the time and my oldest daughter and I lived in an apartment, and we desperately wanted to get in a house and get into a house. Now my husband at the time was not a good worker, like at anything. He could not keep a job to save his life. And 5 days after I had my second child, we were evicted. We got an eviction notice that we had to be out. And so we were looking for houses, and we found this little house on River Met. It had an apartment upstairs, and we had the whole downstairs. And the moment we walked in, I did not like it. I did not like it, and I did not want it. And I will never, for the rest of my life, forget the smell. I will not. The smell was mold and dust and rot, and it permeated everything. However, we were desperate. So it did not matter that I did not like this house, that I did not feel comfortable there, and that it smelled like mold and garbage. I had no choice but to take it because it was what we could afford to take at the time. So we immediately moved in. And from day one, crazy stuff happened. I spent an entire day cleaning, cleaning, pine sawing everything. We had those little Glade stick-on air fresheners everywhere, trying to get the smell out because I just couldn't stand the smell. Anyhow, day one, weird stuff started. Like, and it was things that to start with you just kind of slough off. Like the baby's pacifier, I'd go looking for the pacifier and I couldn't find it anywhere. And the next thing I know, it's laying on the table right in front of me. Now, you know, now that I'm 48 years old, that kind of stuff happens, and it's not ghostly because I look for my glasses all the time and figure out they're on top of my head. But at 23 years old, knowing that I had looked and looked and it wasn't there, it was weird. Things that seem pretty normal, like the baby had socks on, and then all of a sudden the baby didn't have socks on, but she was sound asleep, so how did she kick them off? And then I find him laying on the floor in the kids' bedroom, which, by the way, let me tell you about the kids' bedroom. I couldn't stand that room. That room was the creepiest room in the apartment. Well, house, but it was still like, you know, bottom floor apartment, which is for you. When you walked by that room, it just felt like someone was glaring at you, not watching you and staring at you, like a hostile person was in that doorway glaring you down, wanting you to get away. And the room was so creepy that although I had the kids' beds in there, I kept the newborn in a bassinet in our room and started allowing my three-year-old to sleep in there with us too. Because she couldn't stand to be in there. She wouldn't even go in there to play with her toys. If she wanted a toy out of her room, I had to go in with her to get the toys and bring them out to the living room because she would not step foot in there without me. This is from day one. This didn't start like, you know, a weekend or whatever.
Right. There was no slow build. You were immersed into it immediately.
Yes. I wasn't there for very long before. It was just, I don't know, maybe a week into it, 2 weeks into it. I can't remember at the moment. But I was babysitting for one of my friend's daughter, and she was the same age as my three-year-old. And it was just me and the two little girls. This was the first really scary experience there. And the baby. And they were sitting on my lap, and we were singing the ABCs and all, you know, It's Busy Spider and all that little stuff. And all of a sudden, this little girl, I try not to say names because I don't want the people that are involved in these instances to be mad or sue me. The little girl looked up at the window and her face went white. She looked terrified. And I looked over to see what she's looking at, and there's the face of this man standing in the window. I mean, he's like outside looking in the window and just standing there staring at us. And I still remember what he looked like. He had this dirty blonde hair and a little bit of a scruffy beard and deep dark circles under his eyes. Hey, he looked like a vampire kind of without fangs. I mean, seriously, he was scary. What you would expect if you saw a junkie in an alley in the middle of the night. That's what he looked like. Real skinny. And he's just looking at us. And I jump up with these girls in tow. My couch didn't set up against the wall. It was out more into the room. Slid him behind the couch. Grabbed up the baby. Ran in the bedroom. Grabbed our gun. And went right back out there. Laid the baby in my three-year-old's arms and stood there in the middle of that living room because from the living room, I could see my kitchen door and I could see my front door. And whichever door he was coming in, he was going down. I pulled back the clip and I was ready. And I saw his face again at the kitchen window. He's just looking in the window. no emotion. It wasn't like anger or just this deadpan, emotionless face staring at me. There was a body attached to it. He wasn't see-through. It wasn't like I was seeing somebody transparent. I mean, this looked like a real person. So I'm waiting for him to go to the back door and kick it in. That's what I'm expecting. It wasn't the best neighborhood in town because obviously we were broke, so we couldn't afford the best neighborhood in town. And nothing. I don't see him. The door's not getting kicked in. I edged up to where the phone was hanging on the wall and called 911, told him what was going on, told him I had my gun out. They told me to put it away, and I told them, hell no, sorry. I'm sorry if I'm not allowed to say that. I'm not putting this gun away until you have somebody here, because you're not here yet, and this dude could be coming through my door at any time. And then I saw him just step in front of the back door, and I'm holding my breath, phone in one hand, gun pointed straight at the door, wondering if I should shoot through the window or if that was even legal. And then poof, gone. And when I say poof, I mean he was there and then he wasn't there. He didn't step back. He didn't step to the left. He didn't step to the right. He just wasn't there anymore.
Wow.
And here I am. I've got three screaming little girls, because by that point they were screaming and crying. The baby was crying because they were crying. I'm talking to a 911 operator, have no idea what she's saying to me because I'm trying to figure out what just happened. And then she tells me, you know, they're there, they're out front, put the gun away, you know, they're going to be coming to the door. And I'm like, when I hear them knock, I will lay the gun down.
Until
then, it's in my hand because I don't know where this dude is. and you know, it's boom, 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 four-way police. And I uncocked the gun, dropped the clip, opened the door, handed it to him, because I have police officers in my family. I know what makes them feel comfortable. He took it, asked me what was going on. I was trying to be coherent because I'm telling you, my mental state at that point, I could not get from point A to point B to point C because B disappeared. And I was terrified and I was confused. And I'm sure that poor man listening to me ramble about what just happened thought I was a lunatic.
Were they sending out the paramedics thinking you were a drug addict or what was going on?
Well, you know, he's at that point, I'm trying to calm down kids and I'm talking to him and, you know, the little girl and my daughter was telling him, there's a bad man. And they're searching. By that time, there was more than one. I think there was three or four. There's three. I believe there were three. And they're, two of them are outside walking around the house and blah, blah, blah. And then one comes up and the officer I was talking to told him he wants to talk to him, takes him back outside. He comes back in a few minutes later and asks when my husband will be home. And I told him, you know, well, he's out bowling, but he should be here any time. And he said, okay. He said, that's good. He said, listen, I can see that you're scared. I understand that you're terrified, and I'm not sure what happened. But there's a dip on this side of your house. This is the west side of the house. There's a very large dip, and for you to have seen what you thought you saw, that guy would have had to have been 12 foot tall. There's no footprints, and it's still pretty muddy out here. There's nothing to indicate that there was a person outside that window staring.
Did they think you were imagining it, or were they just as kind of mystified by this whole situation themselves?
I think the two outside that I didn't get to talk to thought I was just batshit crazy.
Right.
I really do. But the guy, the officer I was talking to, I mean, he saw the terror in not just me, but the 2-3-year-old. He saw that we were clearly scared of something, but he was stumped too. And he was kind of, at the very end, he was kind of short and not as understanding. I didn't want them to leave. I asked them to stay until my husband got home. But, you know, Fort Wayne is a big city. I don't know if you know where that is or not. And those guys are busy. There's stuff going down every couple of minutes. They don't have time to babysit you because you're scared because somebody you couldn't have possibly seen was
right
in your house. Was lurking. So
sure.
Luckily my husband pulled up almost simultaneously when they left. And he didn't believe me either. He was laughing. He laughed and laughed and looked at me. But I didn't sleep well from that point on. I was terrified because I knew if it couldn't have possibly been human, then it had to be a ghost because I knew what I saw.
Right.
There's no way that this guy was not there. I was not hallucinating. I wasn't doing drugs. I hadn't been drinking. I wasn't watching scary movies. I knew what I saw.
Right.
And from that point on, the house, the hostility in that house grew more intense. That feeling, that intense feeling of, I didn't hear voices, but it felt like, get out of my house. That's what it felt like. I don't want you here. I want your breath here. Get out. Right.
Now, did your husband ever end up starting to feel this and realize there's something wrong?
Oh, he saw it. He, at the day that he realized that I was not, because I told him every day, this house is haunted. This house isn't kind of haunted. It's like way haunted, and we are not safe here. We need to move. And he kept telling me, I am not moving. We just moved. I'm not moving again. If you want to move, you go ahead, but I'm staying right here. That's what he told me. Not too long after this, and of course, you know, he loved poking fun at me for being a psychopath that believed in ghosts.
Right.
Not too long after this, there was an incident where he was in the bathroom. He was on his hands and knees cleaning the floor. And I was standing by the doorway talking to him. I was not like leaning on the door frame, but I was standing in front of it. And he had stood up and he turned around. And all of a sudden, his face went white and his jaw dropped. And I watched his head move like his eyes were following something. And I whipped around real fast and there was a shadow. There was a 6 foot tall, those were about probably 10 foot ceilings in that house. It was one of those really old houses, big and open and hairy. And there was roughly a 6 foot tall shadow walking down that wall. It turned and walked into, it was like against the wall. I mean, it wasn't like palpable. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a shadow person where there was thickness to it. It was like a shadow that would be cast if somebody had light on them and was walking through a room. Except we were the only people in the room and we weren't freaking moving.
Oh, and it walked. Technicalities, Willow.
And that thing turned the corner, and right there where it turned into was like a little pantry,
mm-hmm.
and it had this big pull-up door that led down into the basement, which is where all that stinky smell came from. It held water all the time, and the landlord never bothered cleaning it out, so it was moldy. And now we know a lot of stuff about black mold, and I should have never had my kids living there, but at the time, didn't know that. And it was at that moment when he realized I was not full of crap. And
although, you realize now that they have found that there are hallucinatory effects when exposed to black mold.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Something to consider health-wise, yeah. So hopefully that's...
hallucinations. I don't know.
Right.
I will tell you when we get to the end of this story, which I'm sorry, drastically long, but...
No, that's fine.
But when we get to the... You have to understand, I lived in this house for exactly... Well, not exactly, because I actually was 28 days. 28 days. Due to the rest of the occurrences. And there were two more. Other than the little bitty things, things get moved around, things coming up missing. My makeup. Oh, my gosh. I could not keep makeup for nothing. And I know my three-year-old wasn't taking it because she'd had it all over everything. It just kept coming up missing. Anyhow, so we're going to fast forward to the night that I decided I was going to move. I believe we are at day 27, 26, day 26. I was laying in bed. My three-year-old was on the floor on a pallet beside me with her pillow. The baby was in her bassinet. My husband was in bed with me asleep, snoring his head off. And I could not go to sleep. I kept hearing all these noises that were freaking me out. And I was just terrified because I told you from that point on, I did not sleep well from the time that I saw the guy in the window. And I would listen intently to figure out what these noises are. And then I realized, oh, that noise is the refrigerator kicking on. Oh, okay, that noise is the ice cube maker dumping ice. And just listening intently to all these little sounds that were flipping me out in the car doors outside, every little noise was startling me. I was so on edge, it was not funny. I don't know how many times I got up to check to see if my newborn was still breathing. I was a nervous wreck and I had no idea why. And I ended up talking myself into relaxing and saying, okay, you're actually being a lunatic at this moment, so it's time to get your shit together and calm down. And I'm laying there looking up at the ceiling, and I see this weird shadow, bit of ceiling fan, and I see this weird shadow. It just didn't seem right. It didn't seem like the way the shadow was, that it should have been there. There was light coming through the window behind our bed, but the shadow should have been going away from me, not towards me. It shouldn't have been going towards the light. And I just kept staring at it, trying to figure out what in the world is going on up there. And as I watched, it began to get larger and larger and larger until suddenly, and I mean suddenly, because we're not talking that this took minutes to happen. It was very quick. It grew and it grew and it grew and it grew. And then it was encompassing nearly the entire film. This mass of darkness. It didn't look like a cloud. It wasn't like that rolling, dark, oily smoke that you see in movies.
Right.
It was just the absence, the complete absence of light. You could not see through it. I could not see the ceiling through it. I could see the fan because the fan hung down from the ceiling. It was just the complete absence of light. And whether or not, because, you know, in retrospect, I could have had sleep paralysis. I could have fallen asleep at that point and been dreaming. But I'm telling you, I was wide awake and I could not move. I could not move. I could not breathe. I was struggling, trying to just reach out and touch my husband's shoulder, struggling to open my mouth and scream. Anything to bring attention to the fact that whatever this was had complete control over my body. And listen, I know this sounds crazy. If you've never experienced paranormal, you're going to think I'm crazy as I'll get out. But I'm telling you, I am telling the absolute truth here. I could not move. I could not breathe. I could not yell. I couldn't do anything. I was completely paralyzed. And I felt like I was suffocating. It was like, even though this thing, whatever it was on the ceiling, it felt like the weight of 10 cinder blocks was sitting on my chest. And I thought I was going to die. I really did. I thought that thing was going to kill me. And then, gone. There was no diminishing where it just slowly diminished and went away. There was no, you know, it was just not there anymore.
Wow.
And
chilling.
Tears just rolling and shaking my husband. And he's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong with baby? And I couldn't even speak coherently to tell him what had just happened to me. It took me a long time. I don't know how long, but it took me more than 10 minutes to calm down enough that I could even not be hyperventilating anymore and explain to him what happened. And of course he said, oh, honey, I think you just experienced sleep paralysis. That's what that was. And I told him it's not what that was. But I'm telling you, why won't you listen to me? I am telling you, this just freaking happened. Our children are not safe here. We are not safe here. And he said, well, we're not moving. And I said, well, you know what? I sure as hell am. And the next morning, I got up, and I called my daddy, who was, he's passed now, but he was an incredibly awesome man. And I told him that I was scared to live in that house, that it was terrifying, and I couldn't sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
And kids were scared to be there. And that day, I rented an apartment. That day. And I began the process of packing up. And this is where I can tell you that it was not hallucinogenic effects from black mold. Maybe that was. Maybe everything that happened before that was.
Right.
This wasn't. I was packing up stuff, and we had one of those tape guns. I don't know if you guys know what a tape gun is.
Sure.
It's packing boxes and whatnot. And I was looking all over for it. I had many boxes because we just moved in that I didn't need to tape. I was just folding the top leaves over each other. But I got to the point where I ran out of boxes that were pre-made, and I was going to have to put some flat twins together myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my husband at work because I could not find it anywhere. I had boxes all over my living room. All over my living room that were packed. And he told me, it's in the pantry. It's on that top shelf. You're probably going to have to get a chair because I'm really short. And I went and looked and I couldn't find it. And I walked back into the living room and both of my little girls were asleep, my daughter in my bed and my baby in the bassinet. And I walked back into that living room, and those boxes that had been sitting on my coffee table and on my couch and all over that room were completely cleared. They were stacked, one stack almost to the ceiling. Now, I am not blowing smoke up your butt. I'm telling you verbatim, this is true. And that tape gun was laying right in the middle of my coffee table.
Wow. Yeah, this is definitely, that's above the hallucinatory effects of black mold. Wow.
I woke my kids up, put them in my truck, threw those boxes that were already packed into the truck as fast as I could, and hightailed it to my new apartment, and I never stepped foot in that apartment again, in that house, never again. When my husband came home from work, because of course he decided he was going to move with me, I had told him what happened, and when he got to the house, those boxes were still stacked just the way they were when I ran out of it. That one big tall pile, I couldn't get. The one that went to the ceiling,
sure,
couldn't get that one. It was too tall. I just left it. I didn't care. I didn't care if I had my bed. I didn't care if I left clothes. I didn't care what was in that apartment. I was never going in there again. And right. He had to finish packing and moving it by himself.
So you're the kind of woman that every horror movie fan can appreciate, because we're always yelling at the screen, move, get out of the house. And you actually did. You got in and out and realized that place was not for you.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no way I was going to stay there. And I was terrified for my children's lives, because just what I went through the night before, you know, I took off with the kids, just what I went through. Can you imagine that happening to a 3-year-old or worse, a newborn?
Right.
I don't know how long it was. I felt like it couldn't breathe, because you can't gauge time.
Right.
In these kind of situations.
Yeah, those panic moments, right.
Even if it was 2 minutes of not being able to breathe, and it was probably much less than that, that could stop a newborn's heart. I did not feel safe in that house, and there was no way I was going back. There was nothing in that house that was so important to me that it was worth my children's lives. Or my own.
Well, I applaud you on that. That's an amazing choice to get out. Wow, Willow, we've got just a few minutes left together. What's another one of your favorite stories that you put into the book in any of the first four volumes? And obviously, we're going to have you back to tell us more stories in the future. But what's one of your other favorite stories before we wrap up?
I'll tell you my favorite story, and I will try to keep this as short as possible. Many years after that, the story is in book one. It's called The Dream Home. And by the way, all of those books are 99 cents, so if you get any books, download them. And you can get the whole audio library, all four of them together. It's super cheap. I lived in this big, beautiful farmhouse, 5-bedroom farmhouse. And by that time, I had 4 children, and then ended up with 7, because I got divorced and remarried, and I had 3 stepchildren that lived with me too. And I knew the house was haunted the moment I moved in, because as the years progressed and I encountered more and more spirits, I came to realize I was not living in haunted houses. I was haunted. It wasn't just that I was picking haunted houses. I attract ghosts. And I realized that adds another check mark to the Looney Tunes list, but that's the way it is. I knew it was haunted, but when I moved in, I felt comfortable, just like that very first apartment with my protector. And I'm like, yeah, we've got to have this house. So rent was $350 a month for a 5-bedroom farmhouse. Who is not going to, you know, jump on that? So we moved in. And it didn't take long for me to start figuring out that there was more than one entity in that home. One of the entities was a little girl. I don't know her name, but I will tell you this. I'm really nosy. I am of a nib nose. And there was a big attic. And one day I went in the attic, and there was all this stuff in there. And I'm like, wow, what is all this stuff? And I asked the landlord about it, and he said that it was just old junk he hadn't carted out to be burned. I could do whatever I wanted with it. Cha-ching! I love it. Antique, so that was awesome. So I started digging through stuff and getting rid of junk, and I came across in the back corner of this attic, hidden behind this old wooden barrel thing, this picture of this little girl in a blue fur bonnet with blonde curls, white blonde curls, and a long blue velvety coat with the fur collar with big buttons, and she had big blue eyes, and she was just beautiful. I fell in love with it the moment I saw it. So I took it down. It was an oil painting. I had to research how to clean an oil painting. I had no idea. So I figured that out, and I spent an entire day cleaning this picture and getting it into pristine form so that I could hang it on my wall because I just loved it. My little girl, my youngest daughter at the time, had the same little curls, but she had strawberry blonde hair. And it was just super cute. I even spray painted the frame to freshen it up, make it look cute. And I hung it on the wall. And I was so proud of this project. When my kids got home from school, they were not amused. They did not like that picture. It creeped them out. My husband did not like that picture. It creeped them out. Everybody wanted me to take it down. And it really hurt my feelings because I had worked so hard. Well, it wasn't long after that, and I left it up because I'm the mom, and that means I get to do the decorating. Not long after that, I was asleep at night, and I felt this poke on my arm, poke, poke, poke. And I woke up expecting to see one of my children, and there stands this little girl. And I'm telling you, this was the same little girl in this picture with the blonde curls, wearing a white nightgown, very, very pale, big blue eyes, and she said, "Mama." And I just froze because it wasn't my daughter, and I didn't know exactly who it was, but I knew it wasn't a real-life person, and then she was gone. From that moment on, I developed a relationship with that little ghost. As ridiculous as that sounds, that was so real. She would play peekaboo with my kids. My kids all saw her. In that story, there's even a story about my great nephew was over visiting, and he couldn't talk. He'd fallen, and he injured his tongue. He bit through his tongue, so he couldn't talk. It was real little, anyhow. Or he couldn't talk well. It's not that he couldn't talk at all. But he was there visiting one day, and he let out this enormous, loud, blood-curdling wail. And we went running to see what happened. I thought he'd gotten hurt, and my nephew took him outside to get him calmed down. At the time, he was the only one in the living room, and all the other kids were banging on the piano in the dining room. So we thought maybe just got too loud for him, hurt his ears or whatever. And my nephew comes in, and remember, in my family, we don't talk about the paranormal. But I've not discussed my little blue girl, which is what I called her, because of the blue outfit she was wearing in the picture. I did not discuss any of that or any of the other ghosts, because my children had seen an old lady. I had seen me in there. With my family, and my nephew comes in, and he says, "I don't know what to make of this." And I said, "What?" I said, "What's wrong? What's wrong with him? Did somebody hurt him? Did the cat get him?" He said, "No. He said he was watching TV with the little girl, and she got up and walked into the wall." I said, "What?" He said, "She went into the wall." And I said, and I asked him, "Can you show me what happened? Can you show me what happened?" And he shook his little head no, and he would not let his dad take him back in that front room for nothing, because that scared the crap out of him. He was perfectly fine watching TV with her, but when she went through the wall, that drew a line for that little guy.
Well, understandable. Everybody has to have friendship boundaries, and vanishing through walls could be one of them. Willow, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for stopping by and joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Haunted, 100% totally true ghost stories, volumes 1 through 4 are available. And Willow Cross, the author and storyteller this evening with us on the show. We'll be back again with you next week with a whole week of brand new shows and your buddy Timmy D back at the helm. We got Supernatural News and Parashare on Monday and a bunch of great new topics to cover with you. We'll do that when we return to the best in paranormal talk radio next week. Today's episode was brought to you by Amazon.com. Remember, if you are ready to purchase anything off Amazon, then make sure you use our podcast1.com killer deals link and then find Beyond the Darkness there. You'll be able to support all of our advertisers, and a small portion of every sale from Amazon.com then goes to help out your buddies here at Beyond the Darkness. Our show is also brought to you by Audible, where as a listener of Beyond the Darkness, Audible is offering you a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service and over 180,000 titles to choose from for all of your smart devices. Try it out at www.audibletrial.com/darkness. That's www.audibletrial.com/darkness, and take advantage of that special offer right now. That's it. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/IHEART for 40% off. Terms apply.